Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Hey folks, welcome into On to Waveland. It's the Cubs podcast here at The Athletic. I am Brett Taylor, joined by Sahadev Sharma. No Patrick Mooney this time. We found that it was just me and him last week because Sahadev, you were on vacation. And I voted him off the island. So it's...
I'm back,
you're baby. You're back in. I count for a vote and a half. So
wow.
Actually, no. It was actually Michael, our producer. I didn't want to throw him under the bus. We decided to bring
you
back.
Sick of Patrick.
No, Patrick will be back on Thursday. We're just you know, and that's the nice thing about a three-man booth. We can take the little breaks when time affords. And I hope you had a nice time away, Sahadev. You missed, you know, Patrick and I got to discuss some really, really terrible baseball. And then you return just in time for the Cubs to actually win their first series in over a month, taking 2 of 3 from the Braves. So we're going to talk about a variety of things from that series and, you know, tapping it into the bigger picture. And maybe we'll start with how it ties to something you just wrote at The Athletic. Wait, did I do the whole, you know what? I got so sucked into the whole we voted Mooney off the island thing. I missed my normal intro rhythms. So apologies in advance if you're listening and you're like, Brett didn't say thing X that he always addresses. Whatever. Michael can edit it in and post and it'll be a robotic, you know, whatever it is. He'll insert it with, you know, a robo voice. So anyway, Sahadev wrote something at The Athletic about the starts by Justin Steele and Keegan Thompson against the Braves. Both were very good and important, I would say, for different reasons. And then, obviously, we saw Kyle Hendricks yesterday have another of the starts that we have seen from him the last year and a half, where it really underscores that margin for error that he has with his particular style just seems to be getting thinner and thinner as he gets older and repeating sort of ultra pristine mechanics to produce ultra pristine command, maybe is fading a little bit naturally as part of aging. Maybe just there's an extended funk that he's had trouble sorting out. I did appreciate hearing him say after the game that his shoulder feels great. That was what he rested for earlier in the month. But of course, if the shoulder feels great, then a game like yesterday where there is wildness out of the zone and then far too many pitches left up in the zone, you can't just say, ah, well, it's just the shoulder and he's coming back from the shoulder thing. So that was, I wouldn't call it concerning because we've seen it before, but it stood in contrast, I think, to what we saw in the very same series from Justin Steele and Keegan Thompson.
Yeah, you know, there were moments where I was slightly encouraged with Hendricks from
the
start.
The middle,
I mean, yeah, even in the first, like, It was the four-pitch walk, right? And then Darno jumped on that fastball and just launched it out. But he was getting swing and miss. The changeup looked like his changeup. And those are little encouraging bits. But when you don't have fastball command and you throw it 86, 87, it's not going to work, right? Part of me wants to push back on people that are just like, he's done and he'll never be effective again. Just because this happens, like extended periods of really poor play by veterans happens, and the smart, good, quality veterans that put in the work, they can bounce back and give you effective years. What the problem is, we just don't know how long it takes sometimes. We don't know exactly what's going on with him. All those things, you know, are the questions that we need answers to. And you can't just dismiss players that have a track record. It's unfair to dismiss anyone, right? Like, let's see how these things play out. Jose Quintana is pitching well right now, right? I mean, decently enough. If he was a back-end starter on a good team, you'd take it, right? We never saw that. We almost never saw that with him, with the Cubs. Weird things happen. Guys put in the work and figure things out. There's no reason yet to write him off, but there's plenty of reason to be concerned, right? I think we're past that point where it's like, is this a blip? Because this is a legitimate concern, and you have to wonder what he is going forward. He's not the reliable starter that he was from 2016 to 2020, where you just knew, okay, maybe there's going to be a bad start here and there, but overall, he's one of the most consistent starters in baseball. That's just not the case anymore. So not having that reliability, that consistency is the concern going forward, and not knowing when you're going to get him back to being, if you're going to get him back to being that guy and when it'll happen, that's a big question mark for this team going forward, and just kind of throws things for a loop as far as, well, you know, how far away are they from contention? Well, let's count the rotation pieces that they have. Who can you rely on? And suddenly you reduce it by one when you thought you had a guy that was kind of locked in.
Yeah, when Hendricks was at his best, even on the days when he wasn't missing bats, which, by the way, he did miss a lot more bats than people gave him credit. You know, as a command control guy, I think sometimes you forget just how well the two-seamer and the changeup paired together to get a lot of swings and misses. Even when he wasn't getting that, he was staying off the barrel, and the quality of contact was just always, you know, really tremendous. That Kyle Hendricks was one of the guys pointed to as our understanding of seam shifted wake was developing, because his two-seamer sinker operated in a way that we couldn't quite figure out why guys had such a hard time making quality contact on it. And I think what we've seen the last year and a half is that there are days too many when he's not only not missing bats, but he's not staying off the barrel. I mean, the quality of contact the last year and a half against him has changed dramatically. And that is perhaps where you would get more of the concern about his ability to reinvent himself or figure it out or stabilize. Because we know he still has the ability to be an effective big league pitcher, because we see starts like the last time out where he was very effective. That's still in him. But I think what you wonder at this age and with his style is it realistic to think he's going to be able to stabilize it again in the same way he could and did when he was 27, 28, 29 for long stretches? And so that's what I'll be curious to see the rest of the way. I think, you know, we'll get to it when we get to it, but I don't think chatter about Kyle Hendricks and the trade deadline is really going to make a ton of sense for a lot of reasons. I think what's going to make the most sense for the Cubs is to see if he can get to a place where you feel like, as Sahadev said, okay, he's a good solid 4-5 for us for 2023. We can sort of mentally lock that in and think about how do we address the rest of the rotation.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Speaking of which, like I said, that Hendrix start for not just style and success, but also role on the team, it stood in interesting contrast to the pitchers who preceded him in the series, where you had Keegan Thompson with, I think, inarguably the best start of his career on Friday, and then Justin Steele, not with as good a start overall as he has shown us recently, but I would contend maybe with some really substantial value in that start. And maybe we'll start there, because you got into this in your piece, Hadev, and I had the same reaction watching that fifth inning that it sounds like you took away from it and David Ross took away from it as well.
Yeah, I mean, it was just, you know, one of those simple growth moments. Every starting pitcher needs to kind of be pushed a little bit past their limit, maybe, or what, you know, it... a reporter commented after that inning ended, after Steele got out of it, which was essentially home run, strikeout, walk, walk, single, or single, walk, walk, right?
I think it was single, walk, walk.
Single, walk, walk, and then he got out of it with a sac fly and a fly out, right? Not some dominant Houdini act, but limited the damage and did a good job. And one reporter kind of commented, I got Tony La Russa vibes there. I thought Ross was leaving the guy in too long. And I said, he probably did leave him in too long. But that's the exact moment.
If your only focus is winning the game.
Right.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's what he was thinking. I think he knew that he was kind of teetering on the edge there, but he wanted to see what happened because he needs to figure out. He had a 4-0 lead going into that inning, 4-1 lead when the bases were loaded. That's, you got to see what can a guy get out of it. What can he do? Steele, I don't think was racking up the strikeouts on this day. He wasn't a swing and miss guy, and he wasn't even like at his best on the day. I didn't feel like getting a ton of ground balls, doing what he does really well. So to be able to battle kind of through five innings, give up two runs, that's a nice start for a guy. You need to learn how to work through those moments. I mean, this is all part of the growth process. There, I talked to David Ross before the start about it. Just, you know, taking your lumps, having those bad starts. Keegan Thompson had two terrible starts and then goes out there and has his best start as a starter in the big leagues. Justin Steele isn't really clicking, but can get through five innings against a good team, giving up only two runs and keep his team in the game and set them up for a win. I think those are the things that we need to see now and the next, 4 months, 3 months that we have here. That's exactly what you need to keep seeing with Steele, with Thompson, with Killian, even Swarmer. I think that guy's probably a reliever in the long run, but what's the point in not trying to see what he can do now? Even when Alzolay comes back, what can he do? I mean, that's what this season has been about for a little while now, for far too long for a season, but it's just the reality, and you can't... What was really frustrating to me is having fans after every bad outing, this doesn't work. This guy can't start. The league is just littered with guys who have had stretches like this, who are now key cogs on winning teams' rotations. I mean, just look at the last three opponents, and it's just so many guys who people have had guys who have had really rough stretches or just didn't look good enough. I mean, Charlie Morton wasn't good until like a three-war guy until age 33. Right. I mean, Joe Musgrove is now one of the best pitchers in baseball, and guys like basically overlooked that trade when the Padres acquired him. Jordan Montgomery, Nestor Cortez with the Yankees. I mean, Montgomery is a great example of a guy that just couldn't get over the hump. Looked like he had the talent. Oh, this guy's not a starter. He can't go deep into games. Oh, this guy's so inconsistent. He'll never be a quality starter on a winning team. Nestor Cortez came out of nowhere. I mean, it happens really more often than you think. I mean, Cubs fans should know this. I mean, they saw Jake Arrieta go from afterthought to superstar, right? It's not always going to look exactly like that. It comes in different forms, but you have to be patient. And this is exactly when you have the time for patience. This is if there's, Brett, we've talked about this. If there's one thing to lament over the years of really good baseball that we watched of the Cubs, it's that they didn't have this kind of leeway to let guys struggle to figure out what they had with different players, right? They couldn't afford to do that because they needed to win. And right now that isn't the case. So you take advantage of these moments. It sucks to watch a bad team on the field, but maybe this pays off in the long run.
To that point too, and as it relates specifically to the pitching that we're seeing in this conversation that you are having now, during those good years, the Cubs generally, especially once like Arrieta had established himself and Kyle Hendricks came up and established himself, they had like a set rotation every year. Now, they needed to tap the depth, but it was like clear depth with starting pitchers that were backing up starting pitchers. And it was like, this is the rotation of full starting pitchers. And what we didn't see for years and years is something that we had seen other successful organizations do all the time. We've seen the Dodgers do this for years. We've seen the Cardinals do this for years. And it's these guys on the bubble of potentially being a big league starting pitcher or being a very good reliever. They get several seasons of bouncing back and forth in those roles before they can really establish themselves as starting pitchers. Like Sahadev said, you go back and look at some of these guys, some very, very successful starting pitchers around baseball, their first two or so years in the league, they were bouncing around between three roles. They were a starter at AAA, they were a fill-in starter in the big leagues, and they were a quality reliever in the big leagues. And I think I wouldn't say I'd forgotten this, but I just am not used to seeing what that actually looks like in practice. And so like with Keegan Thompson specifically.
That's such a good point. When was the last time we saw a pitcher developed, right?
This is all new. I have training wheels on this topic right now. Okay. So like, don't, you know, no judgment, but you know, with Keegan Thompson, I think I have been very quick to say, look, when he's in those quick burst outings and he knows he's going 40 pitches and he's, you know, the foot is down, he can be so fantastic. And when he's trying to sort of toe that line and conserve a little bit and diversify the repertoire, he's had trouble. So clearly, he's just going to be a quality multi-inning weapon for years to come. And why should the Cubs reject that bird in hand in a hopeless endeavor to make him a starting pitcher? And then you see an outing like Friday and you remember, shit, this is what it's not just that the development of the player is uneven and not linear, as they like to say, but it's that as an organization, you have to give the exposures to the various things because that in turn helps with the development. And so that's why you can't be so quick, especially in a year like this, when you have the room to play around, you can't be so quick to say, okay, this guy's definitely a reliever or he's definitely a starter, because sometimes that act of struggling and looking like a guy who can only go a couple innings is part of the development into a starting pitcher. And it really clicked for me. This whole concept really hit me hard when in discussing the start. So after his two rough ones, the one in Baltimore and the one in New York, Thompson had mentioned something about feeling like his landing point was a little bit off. Essentially, we don't need to dig into the specifics, but point being, maybe it was a mechanical issue. I was a little bit off. After this outing on Friday, it sounded like, so Wilson Contreras mentioned, I saw a quote that he had referenced something to Thompson about tweaking something in the, you know, in the delivery. But mostly what was focused on was not any of that. It was just saying, you know what, come out foot down, throwing the fastball, staying in the zone, really try to stay aggressive with the hard stuff. And that's the mentality of a guy who's coming in for a 2 or 3 inning burst. And yet he went 6+ innings. And you wonder how much learning happened for him as a starting pitcher in doing those bursts of relief. Like, it isn't that he just has to do that because he's good at that. It's, oh, this might be more of the part of the process of developing a starting pitcher.
Yeah, I mean, all that is key, right? Learning how to use your pitches, when to, you know, turning over a lineup doesn't mean you have to start introducing all your different pitches over and over again, right? I mean, you don't need to, just because you went fastball heavy the first time through. If it worked, maybe you try and see if it continues to work, right? I mean, maybe you sequence a little differently, but you still go fastball heavy. I mean, it's more than the results that'll tell you when to switch it up, right? I mean, like Ross talks about it all the time. It's how the guys are reacting to pitches, how the ball is coming off the bat, simple things like that. You may still be getting outs, but you may not like what you're seeing as far as how the ball is coming off the bat, how hitters are reacting to pitches. So, I mean, there's more than just one or two things that are going on here, and it's. I mean, with Keegan, he could feel like he was off, right? He felt it in Baltimore. He felt it in New York. We talked about it. He knew what was off in that sense. So, I mean, it can be a combination of things. And I think it's similar. Caleb Killian, when I talked to him Sunday, he's starting tonight, Monday night in Pittsburgh. And he had some similar things to say about his mechanics. And it was kind of a lower half thing. He said his back was tilting and his back never tilts and his head was going down earlier and it was taking his eyes off the plate. All these little things. He said it culminated from one thing with his lower half and it led to a bunch of other things happening, which is right what almost always happens, right? Like it's one little thing that leads to a bunch of other things and the whole thing's out of whack. Because he said, I mean, this is a guy who doesn't walk batters, right? Like command has always been his thing. Even before swing and miss, he started getting more swing and miss. He's always had command, so to see that type of outing from him was really weird. He said not a single pitch was working for him. He said normally if one or two pitches are off, I have something I can go to and then get guys out with, at least battle through an outing. He didn't have that last time out, so that's, you want to see him try and correct that. You want to see, I mean, tonight's going to be interesting to see how he comes out. Right. And is he pounding the zone? Is he less about the swing and miss and more about, is he avoiding the walks and is he, you know, even battling out there? Because it didn't seem like he was his last outing. It didn't seem very competitive.
Yeah. It looked at times and you always have to caveat this, a double caveat. One, I'm not a scout, so I only just can see what I see with my eyes, having watched a lot of baseball. And then also, I'm not trying to read his mind, what was going on. But it looked at times like when he was falling behind an account or when a pitch wasn't doing what he wanted it to do, it seemed like he started overthrowing a little bit. And so he was losing the release point on top. And often that's when you see a guy missing high. And it makes total sense what you said. I hadn't seen the quotes or I hadn't heard this, that his lower half, you know, if it starts in the lower half, you're going to lose that release point because of the way the kinetic chain works. So that is, I don't know. I mean, it can be encouraging. It sort of doesn't matter precisely because of something we talked about within the confines of his first start, the start against the Cardinals, where he had one really bad inning. And it's like, it doesn't really matter for evaluating him because we're not trying to evaluate him right now. This is just his next step in development because he's a guy he's more of a traditional starting pitcher mold, 4-pitch mix, great starter's body, has had success up the ladder in the minor leagues, is, you know, clearly capable of dominating at AAA. So like there aren't any questions on that front. It's just, okay, so he's here and ready to be a big league pitcher, but how do we work with him and help him experience the things he's going to need to experience to be a quality starting pitcher next year? And so, I too will be very interested to see his start tonight, to see how and if he makes those adjustments at a real micro specific level. I'd like to see him have more success with the cutter and the two seamer, because that he has paired those together very well in the minors, both as not bat missing pitches, but as weak contact pitches. And he's had tremendous success with that. And I don't know that in either start in the big leagues, we've seen him command either of those pitches well. In fact, the cutter in particular, I think he's maybe thrown a total of like four or five strikes with it. A total. It just is, he has not been able to locate it at all. And in that Cardinal start, he ended up going to the four seamer a lot, which looked great. I mean, it looked awesome, but that's like not necessarily his primary fastball. So I will be, you know, really interested to see that. I also saw Lance Brzozowski, who is at Marquee, mentioned, he talked to Killian about his slider,
yeah,
which looked really good at times. And essentially Killian was like, well, I don't really throw a slider. It's, right. He takes a little off the cutter, which can be fine. You know, if you can do it, great. But that'll be something down the road for maybe the Cubs to work with him on to really differentiate those pitches more. So, yeah, there's a lot of nerdy stuff to enjoy about Caleb Killian.
Right. Well, I mean, and that's I like kind of what you touched on there is what I want to see him really hone in on what he's always done well, right, in the minors. See, like, it needs to be like almost a step-by-step for me what I want to see. I want to see him have a start where it's the cutter and the two-seamer. But then I want to see that next step where, oh, yeah, remember this curveball that he developed and dominated the AFL with? I want to see that. I want to see him break that out. But it needs to be, you know, it can't all be all at once, right? This is it's like this is just, like you said, another step of his development. So let him go out there and learn how to, you know, attack opponents at the big league level with what worked for him best at the AAA level, and then go add in the next pitch. Okay, if it happens tonight, great. If he's able to go through the lineup and dominate with the cutter and two-seamer, great. And then he breaks out the curveball later on in the outing and starts getting swing and miss. That's, I mean, you'd love to see that. But this is going to be a process. This is going to be maybe not the rest of the summer. I assume he'll get sent down to see when we see Miley and Smiley return, because they're going to want to
Stroman.
And Stroman, of course, yeah. Because they're going to want to see the first two, obviously, to get – they need to get starts before the trade deadline, because it'd be a surprise if both those guys – if both those guys are around post-trade deadline, that means their health really went sideways. And it's just going to be a little bit of an issue, because the Cubs need to see guys, younger guys. That's what this – you know, this – like I said earlier, that's what this season's about now. And you really need to focus on how those guys perform and the developmental steps they can take at the major league level. We've talked about this since the inception of this podcast, but developing at the major league level is such a critical aspect of the game that was overlooked for far too long. And the Cubs have really, really trying to focus on that going forward.
All right. Well, you've got it teed up then, folks. You know, watching Killian tonight in a start against the Pirates is not just about enjoying prospect cookies, although it is. It's the kind of thing that's critically important for the organization and for the timeline that I think a lot of us hope they can be on through this season and into next. All right. Well, we'll talk to you again on Thursday. Like I said, Mooney will be back. Make sure you check out Sahadev's work at The Athletic. You can get my work at Bleacher Nation. And we appreciate you listening as always. Subscribe, rate, review, all that good stuff. And we'll talk to you all soon. Take care.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.